good afternoon to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. This indeed is your Captain Joe, and I am sitting in a pro tem captain's chair, not on the magical Isle of Vashon, but I am broadcasting to you live, unrehearsed, and unscripted from the Army and Navy Club in Washington, D.C. It will be disclosed in a few minutes why I'm here and how I got here and what the significance of, in particular, Army and Navy is to your captain and the city of Washington, our capital city, to your captain. But first, my greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who are sons and daughters of the South. I define the South as being south of the Mason-Dixon line, which actually runs between the border between Maryland and Pennsylvania, and it's called that because it was surveyed by two people named Mason and Dixon, and the Mason-Dixon line, being the dividing line between the North and the South, also was a dividing line for the South during what in the South where I have just been, the Deep South, in South Carolina, the Deep South, where it is called, of course, the War Between the States rather than the Civil War. So my greetings to all of Captain Joe's people who come from any one of the southern states below the Mason-Dixon line. The medical list today is as before, with one sad exception, and that is that just in the last couple of days, one of our stalwarts on the Voice of Vashon, not otherwise known to Captain Joe's people from the captain's chair, but well known to me, Dr. Steve Norse, who died unexpectedly and en route to a hospital. So my thoughts and condolences go out to his family, of course, and also to everyone in the Voice of Vashon family. In my own situation, I have six airplane segments, and that means that there are a number of airports that I have to pass through. But most of my connections this trip are through Dulles International Airport, airline code IAD. And Dulles is both enormous and it is split up into a number of different terminals. And to get from one terminal to another or to baggage claim where I pick up my sea bag, it is necessary to ride either on a train or on one of those great big buses that go back and forth around the terminals. So I have decided that I would begin to do more walking because I am no longer encumbered by either Mr. Foley internally or the tankage that goes with Mr. Foley. I no longer have to deal with those, although I do carry as a sort of a lifeboat in my flight bag and in my sea bag, I do carry some of the self-insertable tubing about which I have been trained by the ever-lovely Vivian how to do it, and I have done it. I do not enjoy doing it, but I have done it because that was part of the training program. She would not let me go out the door until I had actually done it myself rather than just watching it being done. So I've started to walk more, and it is neither fun nor is it comfortable. And so the reason that I am in Greenville, South Carolina, was to spend some time with my granddaughter, Julia, who works in a doctor's office. And she is also very athletic, and she hikes and she runs. And she does all of those things which your captain mostly would like to observe from the sidelines and not do myself. And she is pressing down on me to further activate the stationary bike. So I have to report that the stationary bicycle has now been moved from the far corners of the carport out to where I can see it, and therefore getting onto it and pedaling it, at least for a short period of time, cannot be far behind. Further reporting on this will come, of course, but in the meantime, if I'm going to have a very ambitious travel program for this year, which I do have, and if I am going to be passing through some of these enormous airports like IAD or Amsterdam, airline code AMS, which I'm going to do, then I need also to become more facile at the walking business. And I think that probably the answer to that is the much loathed stationary bicycle. The reason that I came to Greenville, South Carolina. Now, all of us who are sailors are or should be and have been familiar with places like Charleston, South Carolina. The Coast Guard is building a very large complex in Charleston, South Carolina. And I have taken my Unimac into Charleston, South Carolina. So we are familiar with the coastal side of the state of South Carolina. Not so much so with the interior. And since my granddaughter and her partner now live in Greenville, and since it had been a while since we had spent time together, we share the same birthday, and it had been some time since we had spent some time together. So I, in putting together this trip with several missions on the East Coast, I decided that I would include and in fact make a large part of this trip some time to Greenville, South Carolina, airline code GSP. GSP has a lovely little airport. It's not very busy, not very active. It's big, long. It's a long way from gate Alpha 9 to baggage claim, sea bag pickup point. But it is beautifully maintained, and it is a very, as airports go, it's a very enjoyable place to be. So we had an ambitious program, and since I was there during a weekend, we had not only an ambitious program, but we had a number of things that we wanted to see and do together. And then this huge snowstorm hit. It does not snow in Greenville, South Carolina, and therefore they do not plow in Greenville, South Carolina. And when there is 2 feet of snow on the ground, getting around turned out to be a challenge, and finding a place that was open turned out to be a completely unsuccessful challenge, because Greenville decides that when the snow gets over 3 inches thick, I guess they all turn in. They all hibernate. And so we had to change our plan a little bit. But we did. We were able to make some of it happen, and we were certainly able to make happen some great visiting time together and some new friends of theirs who now have become my friends. I love that phenomenon when it happens, that I meet new people and we are able to connect on several levels and have an enjoyable time together. And I now have two more of Captain Joe's people who are friends of Julia and Brad's. So one of the things that we did, we wanted to, Julia and I like to go to museums. Brad is not much of a museum person, and so this was a mission that she and I were going to take on together, and both of us are people who read every single placard every single label. And so the first museum that we looked at, the only one that we were able to finally get to that was open, was one called the Museum on Monday, because everything else in Greenville, South Carolina, mostly closes on Monday. But this little museum was open, and it is called the Museum and Library of Confederate History. And it is in an old house in a residential district. So we went to the Museum and Library of Confederate History and met the most interesting person. It turns out that the person who, and we were the only people in the museum, it's not very big in terms of a footprint or square footage, but it is huge in the collections that they have and the way that they have been displayed and the way that they have been put out. They obviously have been able to get some people, help them, who are knowledgeable about the craft of museumology, for that is what the discipline is called. And this is in a very traditional way. These are exhibits that have labels on them. There's not any interaction. There are no buttons to push, no levers to pull, or anything like that. And we both loved it. There is a lot of, it is almost all, of course, history of the Confederacy, and I was corrected when I was talking to the person that was there, and I made the mistake in this particular place of calling it the Civil War, and he said, oh, here in South Carolina, we call it the War Between the States. Now, I am a son of the South myself. I know all of these things, and I probably have in my ancestry, in my Virginia ancestry that goes back to the 1600s, I probably almost certainly have people who fought for the Confederate cause. So there, they had a brochure there about how I could establish my bona fides to become a member of the Sons and Daughters of the Confederacy. I did not tell this gentleman that I am also a direct descendant of William Bradford on the Mayflower. I did not see that there was any point in confusing the issue with all of that. But the truth is that I am. And so I am not only eligible, but my brother-in-law, who did all the research on this, insisted that my sister Lib become a full-fledged member of the Descendants of the Mayflower. That's the name of the, I think that's the name of the organization. For $400, I also can get one of those certificates, and I can post it. Lib and Jack had theirs posted in the downstairs bathroom. There's something about that that I chose not to get into with them. So anyway, we spent the morning in this Museum and Library of Confederate History, and the person who was there, another interesting thing about him was that he asked me whether I asked me what I did, and I said that I was a retired Coast Guard officer. And he said, oh, I had gotten an appointment to the Coast Guard Academy to play football, but I chose instead to go to a local university, and I ended up being a football coach. And I said, well, then did you serve in the Navy? And it turns out that he did not serve at all. It further turns out that most of the people who are members of this particular organization did not themselves serve, but they traced their ancestry back to people who did, and they all served on the Confederate side in the war between the states. They have a wonderful exhibit about the Citadel, which is in Charleston. The Citadel, of course, calls itself the West Point of the South. And it was, but it was a very interesting time. And he went on to say that the city fathers of the city of Greenville, South Carolina, and it's pronounced, by the way, for those of you who do not come from the South, cities like that are pronounced Greenville. You do not go Greenville, Greenville. And I found myself sliding back into a little bit of my Virginia dialect. I can do that. And I found that with a little bit of work, he was saying that the city fathers, the current city fathers of Greenville, would like to close the museum. That they are full bore on denying the existence of the war between the states and everything that brought it up. And I found that to be a particularly interesting political statement. So that's my story about that. I recommend that anybody who goes to Greenville, South Carolina, also goes to not only the city museum, which we did not get to because it was closed either because of snow or because it was Monday, but also to the Museum of Confederate History. It is fascinating. It is beautifully done, and you don't have to be a Southerner to appreciate it. Just appreciate it for the historical value of it. So one of the things that I picked up was the language of the fans. Now, if you all will remember, many of you are much too young to remember the movie Gone with the Wind with the beautiful Vivian Leigh and with Clark Gable. And in that, you would see that the heroine had a fan in a couple of the scenes. And there was a paper among all of the things that were being given away in the Museum of the Confederacy called The Language of the Fan. And it reads like this. I was just fascinated by this. And this is in keeping with my mission to make everyone who listens to me, who spends a half hour with me, to feel just a little bit better about yourself and about the world we live in. And this will certainly do it for you. So evidence suggests, I'm reading from the brochure that was in the museum, The Language of the Fan. Evidence suggests that the earliest hand fans date from about 3000 BC. Folding fans may have come from the Orient to Italy and then spread to the rest of Europe. And then it goes on to say the etiquette goes like this, that if you place the fan near the hearth, you have one mind of resting closed fan on right ear. When may I be allowed to see you? Ah, well, love, you can come and see me. Move that fan over to the left ear. To press half-closed fan to the lips, it must be a half-closed fan. You may kiss me. And then the next one, of course, is resting the fan on the lips. I don't trust you. To cover the left ear with the open fan, do not betray our secret. So there are about 25 of these, and I'm not going to read every one, but because I have a couple of other things that I have to say today. But the etiquette of the fan is absolutely fascinating, and it is. I will close with this one. Carrying an open fan in the right hand, you are too willing. I leave it with that. In other news and other things going on, when my visit with Julia and Brad was over, I left this morning to fly from CSG to Dulles, IAD, to Washington, D.C., and I've been trying to set up a meeting with people in Coast Guard headquarters to talk about where is the whatever was done on the next Ingham because I am going to get that steel from my Ingham and bring it to wherever the next Ingham is and in whatever form she is. And to do that, I need to go to Panama City to where Eastern Shipbuilding is. So I put in calls to people here in Coast Guard headquarters. Now, one of the bad things about what happened after the 11 September attacks was the way that security got increased and in some cases almost overbearing. I doubt that even I, with all of the identification that I carry and with leaving my sailor's rigging knife that I always carry in my starboard pocket, leaving it behind, I have a feeling it will be very difficult for me to get into Coast Guard headquarters unless somebody already inside the building with the suitable badges and passes will vouch for me and let me in. But I am working that problem this afternoon and tomorrow morning, and I may even get into my rental car, a Kia. That was a mistake that I made with Harry Hertz today. And I don't hold any brief against Kias, except that I don't drive them very often, and I'm not completely familiar with all of the setups, the instruments and the instrumentation and the controls. So anyway, I have this very large Kia. It's probably the biggest one they make. And I may well get in that Kia and drive myself over to the latest version of Coast Guard headquarters, which today is in the old St. Elizabeth's complex. St. Elizabeth's was, until some years ago, the federal mental institution. There is a message there, I suppose, and I just need to figure out what that message might be. But in any case, I am familiar with the location, and I may well do that tomorrow. Next week's broadcast, I will report if I've had any success with getting up with these people. But I have a lot of people in the Washington, D.C. area. I went to high school here. I was born just across the river in Alexandria. And my family's roots are deep in all of the Commonwealth, from the very farthest north in Alexandria all the way down to Tidewater. So I always have plenty of places to go and people to see whenever I'm in this part of the world. But if the people in Coast Guard acquisition who are working on the offshore patrol cutter program and the icebreaker program think that all they have to do is ignore me, they do not know the captain with whom they are dealing, for we never give up the ship. When I went through the airport in Charleston, airline code CSG, there were a large group of TSA people just standing around, and there were not many people in the airport. It was early in the morning, and there wasn't many people in the airport, and there wasn't much going on. So I always thank the TSA people for taking care of us and keeping us safe. And when I saw this gaggle, platoon, herd, mob, whatever you want to call them, there were about seven or eight of them just standing around in this little TSA booth place in CSG. And so I walked up to it, and I thanked them all, and I said, I understand that you all are still not being paid. And boy, did that open up the floodgates of complaint. I heard, and I said, I don't understand that. I said, I am a retired Coast Guard captain, and it was my privilege to be able to take care of the best way that I could of all of the people that I was privileged to command. And I said, I don't understand why you're not being taken care of, why you're not being paid. So we had a short but pithy discussion about that. Fortunately, I was on the downstream side of TSA pre-check, and I had plenty of time before I needed to fall in for muster to board this crappy little Embraer aircraft that flew from CSG to IAD. So I became, I essentially held request mast and listened to all of their griping. But the point I make here is that people who have performed work, and these people are clearly working, and they're working hard and in a very difficult environment and very difficult situation, then they should be paid just like I am when the Eagle dumps every month. They should be paid according to whatever their schedule is. I know that I don't need to get into any great detail with this particular group of people, Captain Joe's people. All of you know me well. You know my attitudes about this sort of thing. And you also know that, I can tell you a quick story about that. When I moved my Northwind up to the Great Lakes, we still had the yellow card paper pay records. And I insisted that we take our pay records with us so that my crew could be paid. And those who had a cash payment every 2 weeks would get that cash payment so that they would have a little money in their pocket whenever we were able to let people have a run ashore. I got up to my call with Admiral Scarborough, who was going to be my boss for the winter, and he said, "Captain Joe, what can I do for you?" And I said, "Well, the big thing you can do for me is to make sure that my crew gets paid. We brought our pay records, and so if we can make sure that we get paid, I would really appreciate that." And he said, "I will make it so." And his finance officer, a three-stripe commander, was on the dock every payday with a bag full of money and with an escort wearing a pistol to make sure that it did not get dispensed to other than my Northwind people. So I don't understand why these TSA people are not being paid, and yet they are continuing to soldier on and continuing to take really good care of us. I've only got a couple minutes, and I know that now Captain O'Brien will cut me off if I go over because we've got a program coming right after me. So this is a quick one about the MSC Baltic 3. This is the bulk carrier that is aground off the coast of Newfoundland. And I saw a photograph of her this morning, and she looks to me like she's about ready to break her back. She is that has not yet happened, but she's taking a terrible beating on that shore, and they still have not been able to get to pull her off, and I don't think they're ever going to be able to pull her off. I think they're going to end up having to break her up in place, which would be a sad and tragic thing, because it's just a sad and tragic thing when any good ship is destroyed like that. Next week, I'm going to talk about a ship named the Devon Bay, carrying 55,000 tons of nickel ore. There's a very interesting story about all of that. And I also have a little bit of icebreaker business. So with all of that, the Omega Watch is telling me that it is time for me to say once again and far too quickly that we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And as always, this is your Captain Joe. I am on station, and today I am watching properly from a chair in the Army and Navy Club in Washington, D.C. And all of you remain, as always, in the palm of my hand. So I am on station and watching properly.